Okay, thank you, Joy. Thank you for the invitation also. So I'd like to start with acknowledging the help of collaborators on this project. So first, Thomas Lenormand and mainly Florence Debar, who she's finishing her PhD with me now. And actually, she's looking for postdocs. So if you're looking for a good postdoc, you may want to get in touch with her. So I will start with this figure, which we talked about yesterday, in fact. So it's a study of a goussins in Europe, where they have been able to correlate the use of penicillin in 2000 with the prevalence of resistant strains among different countries. So, for example, France does very badly in this picture. And so the question I'm going to ask in a very broad way is how can we try to minimize this change in frequency of drug resistance? That's what has been called resistance management. And there's been a series of answers to this question. The first one, the obvious one, would be to reduce the drug use. So, for example, in France, maybe we should try to use less drug to decrease this frequency of antibiotic resistance. But of course, you still want to use drugs to get the benefit of curing people from the infections. So another strategy is to mix drugs, so to use different drugs in the same infected patients, but then you have the problem of multiple drug resistance, which you also want to limit. And a third one, which has been really investigated a lot by theoreticians, is the cycling of drugs. The idea being that before the rise of an antibiotic resistance to a specific drug, you could switch to another one and then play on the cost of the resistance on the first drug to limit the increase of the drug resistance in the population. So that's what has been studied in particular by this group of people led by Bergstrom. They studied the switch of antibiotic use in hospitals. And you get a fluctuation in the frequency of different types of resistant bacteria. And what they found in their study, what they showed in this study, is that quite unexpectedly, the cycling of antibiotics was doing worse than mixing antibiotics in hospitals. And their explanation, so, is kind of summarized in this picture. And so if you have on the axis here, you have the beds in the hospitals, and here you have the time as an arrow. So if you have cycling, then at a given point in time, the beds are, the hospital is quite homogeneous. So you have one drug which is used all over the hospital. Then when you have switching, you have a change in the environment. But for a bacteria, which would infect sequentially different beds in the hospital, it will see only one change in the environment. Whereas in the mixing strategy, where different beds in the hospitals are using different antibiotics, in fact, the life of the bacteria is much more complicated because it has to switch from one drug to the next, and this is what actually explains why mixing is best in this model than cycling. So we'll probably hear more about this strategy later on during the week. But my point here is to actually look at this picture and. When you look at this picture, what strikes me is that actually, when you, although here you have a cycling in time, here what you see is basically some heterogeneity in space between the beds, and that's something that has actually not been very well studied in as a strategy to manage drug resistance. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. The idea that you could play with the spatial distribution of drugs in space to reduce the rise of antibiotic resistance. So there have been some studies, and in particular a few papers that really point out to this idea that the rise of antibiotic resistance is really a spatial problem, because in fact when you use antibiotics you have some heterogeneity in space. And so the way we are, so typically these studies, when they model these problems, they use a metapopulation-like modeling framework where the different population correspond to different hospitals, so it's kind of discrete approach to model space. And here we are going to use a different approach where space is modeled as a continuous variable, in fact a linear one, so there is one dimension. and we are going to assume that a fraction of the habitat is treated, whereas the rest remains untreated by the antibiotic. And so in this model, we allow the host, both the infected and the infected host, to migrate. So there is isolation by distance. So there is this parameter sigma, which measures the diffusion of the host in space. So which allows, for example, individuals that are treated to go in the untreated area. And when they go in the untreated area, they are no longer treated. And the reverse is true. If you are in the untreated area in this model, you can also fall into the treated area and become treated. So there is a spatial heterogeneity for the point of view of the bacteria. So just to give a brief outline of this talk, I will first talk about the epidemiology, so the demography induced by this heterogeneity in space. Then I will look at the evolution of resistance to one drug in this model. And then I will briefly talk about a situation where you have two drugs used at different places in the environment. And I will conclude about the rest. So first, the epidemiology. So I will really use the same kind of framework Mark Lipsitch presented yesterday. So it's a compartment model where you have some susceptible hosts that enter the population and die because of natural causes. And they can be infected by some strain. So here we'll call it the wild type. And it can be the host can clear the infection with a certain rate. And they can also die with an increased mortality rate due to the virulence of the wild type. So as Mark said yesterday, so a classical measure of fitness in those models is the basic reproductive ratio, which is the ratio between transmission and all the terms that reduce the life expectancy or the duration of the infection. And so we want to put this model into a spatial framework. So as I said, there is this dimension X, which depicts the spatial dimension. And we're going to assume a fraction QT of the habitat is treated by an antibiotic or by any drug. And the rest remains untreated. So L is the length of the habitat. So this model can be used either to assume that there is a fixed boundary of the habitat, reflecting boundary, so individuals bump on it and go back to the same place. But it can also be valid in a situation where you assume, in fact, some stripe-like environment where you have a series of habitats treated and untreated in the environment. That's the same, exactly the same result hold for this kind of model as well. So I will start by looking at what are the conditions for the eradication of the parasite when you use an antibiotic and when there is no evolution of antibiotic resistance. So those are the values of the R-node of the wild-type strain in the untreated and the treated area. We're going to assume that the R-node is higher when there is no drug. So, and this difference between the R-node between the treated and the untreated area is the effect of the treatment. So in this situation, because the R-node in the treated area remains higher than one, there will be never eradication because it can sustain itself wherever the parasite is. It can have a positive prevalence in all the habitat. And the more interesting question is when the antibiotic is efficient enough to reduce the R-node below one. So because in this situation, there is a, if all the habitat is treated, you have eradication of the parasite. And there is clearly a threshold value of the treatment level that will allow this eradication. So we want to determine that threshold. So to do that, we go back to the model. So we're going to assume simple dynamics of this model. So there is first term, which is the reaction of the growth of the parasite in the population, which is basically what I showed in this figure with the transmission of the wild type infecting new types. And there is the clearance term, where you can also add some mortality also to it. It's all in this term here. And then there is this diffusion term, which depicts the diffusion of the parasite through space. And all these terms are a function of space because in different parts of the environment, they will be affected by the treatment. So you can look at the invasion condition of this wild type, and you end up with this complicated expression, which basically means that there is a threshold habitat size fraction of the environment to be treated that will lead to eradication of the parasite. So just to look at one parameter, what you see is that the higher this parameter is, the higher this quantity is. So the more diffusion means that eradication is easier to produce. So just a figure to show that. If you vary the proportion of treated area, when you increase sigma, the diffusion of the host in the environment, you decrease the quantity that leads to eradication of the parasite. And the idea behind that is that when you have more migration, the parasite will experience more frequently the action of the antibiotic. They fall into the wrong habitat, and this will lead to eradication sooner than if there was no migration. So now we're going to look at the more interesting situation where there is when we're going to allow the parasite to evolve resistant to the antibiotic. So to do that, we allow some polymorphism to emerge. And so there is a wild type with some parameter associated to it, and there is a resistant type which is able to resist the antibiotic. So this is the figure I showed previously, and then we're going to assume that the resistant type is doing better than the wild type in the treated environment because it's resistant. But we are going also to assume, for simplicity, that it's going equally in the untreated environment. Equally, but still, we're going to assume that there is a cost of resistance in the untreated environment. So clearly, if all the environment is untreated, the blue strain is winning, and in the treated environment, the red one is winning. So the problem now becomes it's still an invasion condition that we are after. So when is it that the resistant strain will invade? And to do that, we have to characterize the state of the population when the wild type is fixed in the population. So when you do that, the real solution of this system looks like that. So you have some kind of hole in the prevalence of the infections when you treat the environment, because of the effect of antibiotics, you have less infected host here. But because of migration, you have some kind of cline at the edge of the treatment area. And in fact, there is no analytic solution for this function. So one way to solve this problem is to have a low migration approximation, which will assume that there is a step function that will mimic this hole in the prevalence function. And this parameter tau measures precisely the ratio between the prevalence in the untreated and the treated environment. So this is an important parameter because it will affect the asymmetry in gene flow between the two environments. So there will be much more individuals coming into this environment than the reverse. So again, you can derive an invasion condition for the resistant strain to again, it depends a lot on sigma, the diffusion parameter. So what you find here is that when sigma increases, it becomes more difficult for the resistant strain to invade, to a point where, for example, for this value of sigma, you can, in fact, treat more than 30% of the population without having any evolution of the resistant population, resistant strain invading the population. So the idea behind this result is that migration counteracts the effect of selection locally that leads to maladaptation and that makes the evolution of resistance more difficult. And then there are other parameters that play in this equation. One is what I just presented before, is the tau, which is the asymmetry in migration. So basically, tau will reinforce the effect of migration because it will overwhelm the population that is treated with genes coming from the untreated area. So it will make even more difficult the evolution of resistance that's seen here. And then there is this other parameter, which is the clearance rate of the resistant strain that matters. And what we find here is that when you increase gamma, you decrease the the ability of the resistance strain to invade. So, and when I say we decrease gamma, we decrease gamma by keeping all the other parameter constant, which is all the R-node constant, which are also a function of gamma. So to understand this effect, the idea is that when you have a faster clearance rate, it means that the infection lasts less than when you have a longer clearance rate, and which leads to a higher per capita growth rate of the parasite. So if you go back to the definition of R-node, so in our model it's the ratio between transmission and gamma. So if you increase gamma by holding R-node constant, it means that you will also increase beta. And by doing that, you will increase the small R value, which is the per capita growth rate of the parasite. And you can show that this will increase the strength of selection on the resistance, which will make it easier for resistance to evolve in this model. The bottom line here is that although it's classically assumed that R-node is a valid measure of fitness, here it seems that it's not completely true, because what matters more is the small R value rather than the big R-node value. So a few simulation results to try better see what is going on. So I'm going to here to look at the epidemiology scenario, where you have a space in the x-axis, and here you have the prevalence of the infection. So here you have only one strain, the wild type, with the R-node value which are depicted here. So if you increase the area of the treatment, then you get this hole in the prevalence, which increases. And then I'm going to look at a situation where there is going to be evolution going on. So I'm going to assume two strains of parasites, I1 and I2, the red and the orange one. So there are, as previously explained, two resistant strains. So they have a higher R-node in the treated area, but they have a cost of resistance in the untreated area. And I'm going to use two different strategies of resistance to really look at this effect of small R values. So I chose values so that the red one has a higher R-node value than the orange one, but the orange one has a higher per capita rate of growth than the red one. So if you look at a situation where the treated area is relatively large, you get something like that. So in the untreated area, it's the wild type that is winning the competition. In the treated area, it's the red one that is winning, which is what you expect from this figure. And then you have a Klein at the boundary between the treated and the untreated area. And when you start decreasing the treatment area, then you get to a point where it's, in fact, the orange one which is winning the competition in the treated area. So again, it means that it's not R-node that drives the evolution of this system, but it's really the small R that drives the evolution. And then you get to a point where, in fact, you reach this threshold value of the treatment size where you can still treat the population without having any evolution of the resistance because of the gene flow coming from outside the treated area. So another way to view this result is to plot the proportion of treated area as a function of migration. So migration increases on this way. And just to come back to the talk of yesterday about coexistence, I mean, in this spatial model, it's very easy to maintain coexistence between the two drug-sensitive and drug-resistant strains, provided the migration is sufficiently low. So you will have some Klein resulting from the small migration, but you can maintain easily coexistence in the whole population. So maybe that's one answer that could also explain the pattern that Mark discussed yesterday. And just briefly, so we can also generalize this model to another system where you have two hosts. So if you have a vector and a vertebrate host, for example, like in malaria, you can generalize the conditions to similar expression, which depends on the effective rate of diffusion, which depends on both the diffusion rate of the vertebrate host and the vector, and depends also on the clearance rate of the resistant strain in vertebrate and vectors. And just to finish, I will talk briefly about another strategy to play with the idea of spatial mosaic in treatment is to use different drugs in different parts of the environment. So we're going to assume that in one fraction of the environment we will use one drug and in the other another. And then we're going to assume that drug resistance can pop up, so it will allow this strain to recover high fitness in the treated area with drug B, but it will have a low fitness in the drug B environment. And the reverse is true with drug B. There is another strain, strain B, which is adapted to drug B. And then the question here becomes whether multiple resistance to different drugs can evolve in this system. So if this is the average value of the fitness in the two environments, then we're going to look at two simple situations. One where the double mutation allowing to resistance to both drugs has a higher fitness than the average value, and another when it has a lower fitness. I'm sorry for colorblind people, but I'm going to show this like that. So maybe the letters will help. So I vary here the proportion of the area treated with drug B, so that's the green one, as a function of migration. So here what you see is that the strain adapted to drug B wins when you have a lot of a high fraction of the environment that is treated with drug B, and then the reverse occurs when you have a large fraction of the environment treated with drug A, and when in this case when migration is very large, you can select for the generalist strategy which carries both mutation to win in this situation. And as migration decreases, you see that you can get polymorphism between either specialist and the generalist, or in the extreme case when migration is very low, you get coexistence between the two specialists. So in this particular parameter value, you can't get coexistence between the generalist and the two specialists at the same time. But clearly what you see here is that the lower the migration, the more difficult it is for the generalist strategy to be maintained in the population. And it's even worse when the generalist is doing quite poorly in the system, where in this case, whatever the migration rate, you can't maintain multiple resistance. So again, it's a result that suggests that maybe we could play on migration to try limit the rise of, in this case, multiple drug resistance. So a few take-home messages. One is that so there is a critical area size preventing the spread of resistance in these models. And this is due to the fact that there is a migration load induced by the diffusion coefficient in our model, which actually decreased the efficacy of selection. And this migration load is in fact increased by the asymmetry in population size between the treated and untreated area. Another point to make also is that in this heterogeneous model, R0 is not a valid measure of fitness. And it's also true when you have other kinds of heterogeneity, and I think here on the temporal heterogeneity in the environment, you also get this result that R0 doesn't really predict well which strain is winning. And yeah, to finish, I'd like to comment on the fact that I think there is important to try connect population genetics and epidemiology, and to illustrate that I will come back to this study, which I thought was quite interesting. So it's a group of authors that came together and analyzed the publications related to the evolution of resistance, so either in bacteria against antibiotics, but also in against viral drugs or against insecticides in insects or malaria, etc. So they wanted to point out that all these different studies were having in common the same kind of rules. So you have a selection to resist to one drug and then a cost maybe, and you want to understand these dynamics. And what they showed in these studies, so they had maybe 200 papers, and they used some clustering algorithm to group the different studies. And for example, in this figure, they used the co-citation of the different papers to group the studies in different groups. And they clearly showed that there are mainly two groups in these papers, One is this group here, which is concerned with biomedical applications, which use mainly epidemiology to model the evolution of drug resistance. And then another big group here, which is more about evolution in resistance in agotomy system. And here they basically use population genetics. And the concern here is that when you do population genetics, you forget often about the demography of these systems and the potential feedbacks it may have on the evolution of resistance. And here, having an epidemiology called approach, you may forget about the genetics behind this thing. So they were just stressing the fact that there was very little crosstalk between these studies. And this work here is an attempt to try bridge the gap between these kinds of studies. Okay, so I'll stop here. Thanks. No, precisely. Well, it was really driven by a lack of study on this subject. So I think hospitals really maybe it's more appropriate for the hospital-like structure to use metapopulation models. Here I was interested into that after seeing some data in resistance against malaria in Africa, where they were treating some villages and not others, and they were seeing decline in resistance into space. And it was really looking like some kind of continuous space model that would be more appropriate to model these kinds of things. It was, some villages, and they were showing that there was really a climb in drug resistance. So, for example, they could see resistance alleles in villages that were not treated. So clearly they were coming from the villages that were treated. And so it was really indicating that there was some gene flow coming probably from the migration of the mosquitoes. So you're talking about natural immunity to the bacteria? Adding this to the... I don't know how this would feed back. So the thing is that, so maybe the... I have no idea how it would feed back on the evolution of resistance, but probably the natural immunity will be lower when you have a lower prevalence. So, again, it would be through demography that there would be an effect like that. So, again, that you would need to model that that effect in demography to understand that, I guess. But,